Moncrief on News Talk.
How time flies. It is the 30th anniversary of the release of the film Michael Collins. Mick Jordan, no relation to Neil, is a writer with Ireland's Own and was an extra in the film back in the day. Mick, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean.
This wasn't the first time this story was put on film, am I correct in saying that?
Correct.
Or at least a version of it?
Well, the very first one was in 1936, and it was a Hollywood film called Beloved Enemy. Now, it wasn't about Michael Collins, but it was clearly inspired by him. There was a character called Dennis Reardon, who is very obviously modelled on Collins. Like, he goes everywhere on a bike.
Yeah.
And, I mean, his treaty negotiations, and then he's assassinated because he's seen as a traitor because he falls in love with a British lady.
Yeah.
So that's like just to compromise on it. But then when they released that, that was how it ended, like they followed history. But the preview audiences didn't like the fact that he died at the end. So they reshot it and he survived the shooting.
Yes.
Okay,
they had to change history because test audiences didn't like that.
Well, they had the advantage of it as a fictional character.
Well, indeed,
so they could get around that.
Indeed. But various other people tried to get it to screen as well.
Well, there was Michael Cimino, who made The Deer Hunter, was trying in the 80s, and he was using a script by Owen Harris, which was called Blessed Souls. And then that fell through because of budget concerns, and then Kevin Costner took it over. And he was interested, and he was doing it in the 90s. Now, Robert Redford and Richard Harris had also had an interest in it in the past. But all of these fell through because of the budget. Because for something like this, it needed an epic budget, and studios didn't feel there was enough justification to spend a lot of money on what was seen as just a small Irish story.
Yeah, okay. And then Neil Jordan, well, it wasn't like Neil Jordan came along and said, I want to make this. Neil Jordan had the hits he needed under his belt to give him the money.
You see, he had first been approached about it by David Putnam, who's a big producer in the 80s, and they put him and asked him to write a script for Mike Collins in the 80s. But that, again, the same problem. There just wasn't the money. And then in 94, Interview with a Vampire was a huge hit for Neil Jordan. And as a result, Warner Brothers turned around and said, well, what would you like to do next? And he said, well, you actually own my script. They had the script for Michael Collins in their vaults. So he was able to get $25 million from them to make it, which was, because that was a thing that was holding back all the time for a film like this, particularly a historical period film. You need a lot of money.
Yeah, because for historic films, you have to build sets, you have to, and especially for Michael Collins, it would be crowd scenes.
Well, that was it. That was a big thing, was the crowd scenes, because, I mean, this is before CGI.
Yeah.
And so if you needed crowd scenes, you needed crowds to actually be there.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's how they got branded. That's how I ended up in it. Because basically, they put out a call all around the country, posters everywhere saying, Michael Collins, the film needs you, asking for people to volunteer to be extras on set and just turn up on the locations.
Yeah.
And it worked really well because everyone in the country got into it.
Yeah.
Like, it was almost like a
patriotic duty to go along and be a...
It was a lot of crack.
Yeah.
Like, it was, we were just doing it for the fun of it.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I did, I was in the Bloody Sunday recreation, which was done in Carlisle Grounds in Bray. And it was a special dart laid on from Connolly to Bray. And everyone piled onto the dart, all dressed up in 1920s clothes.
They didn't provide the clothes. Oh, you had to provide your own.
Well, I mean, you had to provide something that would look reasonably like 1920s.
Okay.
So like, jeans or hoodies or anything like that. So everyone on the train was there for the same reason. So it was that atmosphere. And then we all just piled in. And we were there in the grounds for the entire day, I think. It's like it's 30 years ago now, I remember. But it was the entire day filming, and like the scene is only about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
In the thing itself.
And the Bloody Sunday scene, there would have been, were there any actors there at all, or was it just the extras?
No, it was just the extras. Like, that's what I felt to miss there, because a lot of the other scenes, Liam Neeson would have been there as Mike Collins, and Alan Rickman was there as De Valera. And because they had built sets in Grange Gorman. Grange Gorman was a derelict site, effectively, at the time. So they built what was effectively O'Connell Street, like the GPO and all that, and they used that for a lot of the scenes of Dublin 1920s. And one of the scenes there was Alan Rickman as Eamon De Valera giving a speech to a crowd of 5,000 extras. And he didn't know until the night before that they were just volunteer extras.
Yes.
So he found, and this was his first scene.
And that was his first scene.
That was his first scene.
Pressure.
So,
yeah. Serious pressure. Now, and Liam Neeson had heard about this project years before, as I understand.
Yeah, because Liam Neeson was in Excalibur, John Borman's film, in 1979, and Neil Jordan was working on that as making a documentary, the making of Excalibur. And so they met there, became friends. And at the time, or shortly afterwards, when Jordan was writing the script, he approached Liam Neeson because he just had in mind that Liam Neeson would be the perfect man to play Collins. And he never changed his mind in 1995, even though by 1995, Liam Neeson was 44 and Collins was dead at 32.
Yeah.
So, but he's still, I think, like looking back, he's just perfect in the role.
Yeah.
He really embodies it.
Now, and Julia Roberts' involvement, even with the budget that he was given, they couldn't possibly have afforded Julia Roberts.
Well, I don't know what she was paid, but she was she was told, like, it's just in the production diaries. Jordan writes that he hears she's interested because she loved Ireland, still does, like, she's a big obsession with Ireland, and she was very keen to play Kitty Kiernan, and she let it be known to him, and he replied back, well, we don't have the money, and she understands.
Yeah,
and that's all it says. So I'd say she went on scale rights or something.
Okay,
like
right. Okay.
But it was just she did it for the love of the film. Or yeah, the love of the part.
And that day being an extra, was it tiring or do you get, because I imagine there's a lot of standing around and they're changing film or they're waiting for the light to change or whatever.
Well, it was standing, like where I was for my role, I basically just went right up the front in the hope that I would actually appear in the film.
Yeah.
And so I was there at the front of the stand, and you are standing around for a long time because they're resetting everything. And when they had the match played, and we were supposed to cheer for the two match players. And then they told us that at some point in the match, the black and tans will arrive.
Mm.
But they didn't tell us how. So what happened was, suddenly there's a massive explosion and the gates blow open and a tank comes in. And so everyone gasped in shock. So it wasn't acting.
What they wanted. Yeah.
It was just
brilliant.
This natural reaction. But then the tank broke down. Then just at the gate, and they had to reset everything again.
Yeah.
And I remember someone was beside me, and I remember him saying, "said God, if only this had happened 75 years ago."
Yes. Oh, yes.
And it was funny. I'd like, I remember thinking, "Yeah, that's funny." But I said, "Jeez, it really brought home what had happened."
Yeah.
Like, it really set home. This was like a massacre where 14 people were killed.
Yeah.
Two of them kids.
Yeah.
So, but for the scene itself, then, like when they got going, they did. It was the whole day we were there filming it, and so they did it over and over again. But I was fascinated by it because I was big film buff anyway, and I was just leaning on the wall watching what was going on. It never occurred to me that everyone behind me was running around screaming because they were being shot at. This is a performance you're supposed
to do.
Which
is to do, yeah.
And so I've watched it several times, that scene, and I've never seen myself, and I'd say that's why.
I'm guessing you're good for that reason. He looks a bit casual about being shot by this.
He looks fascinated about what's going on,
But they wanted people, obviously, to act and pretend to be terrified. I mean,
they were given clear directions. Like, they would say what happened, like, when you hear the bangs, like, run around. Well, obviously, run around and scream and try and fall over each other or whatever. And they did. I know from looking at the film now myself, like, I was watching it again a couple of times for this article, and it's really effective. Like, it's shocking to see the panic that goes on. And these are just ordinary people off the streets running around recreating the scene. So
yeah.
It worked very well.
When it was released, how did it do in the States?
It did okay. I think overall it made 33 million, which is modest enough. Like, it's, but it was never expected to be huge.
This was
a passion project for Neil Jordan's. And I know he wrote that one of the producers, one of the top guys in Warner Brothers, who was Irish American, said, I know there's a lot of Irish people there's a lot of Irish Americans out there, but they don't all go to the movies and it's not necessarily going to be a hit here. So they expected it to make about what it did.
Yeah.
But it was massive here. Like, I mean, it was number one in here and in the UK on the opening week.
Yeah.
So it was a big hit. And it was well received too.
Yeah. Well, now, correct me if I'm wrong, were some people at least a bit snippy about the depiction of Dev in the film?
Well, there was a lot of controversy that they said it was Michael Collins as the great white hero and Emin De Valera as the utter villain.
Mm.
And it's not really like that. It's much more nuanced than that, because Alan Rickman is great in it. Like, he's playing a part. It's not just a stereotype of the Dev we all know so well. We're just getting engrossed in this character in the film. And that's, I think, for all of them. So I wouldn't say, again, I was coming from a biased point of view. I'm interested in this period of history. So I knew that Dev's own reaction when Collins died was, he was devastated, apparently. Like, he had reported, it's on record, that he said it was a tragedy to happen. So I was looking at with that bias myself. So I don't think it comes out in the film. A lot of people said that it implies that Dev was responsible for it. And no, it has this fictional scene that they meet the night before, but that doesn't imply anything to me.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody else who obviously wasn't the Carlisle Grahams as well says, we didn't get sandwiches. Not like the paid extras behind the goal.
Oh, I didn't know that. I knew we got a bag of crisps and a bottle of water.
There you go. I'm sure that was dinner in
that
those
was
days. Mick, thanks a million for coming in and telling us about
much,
that.
Sean.
That was Mick Jordan there, writer for Ireland Zone.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.